Today's the first Saturday of November, and so we will be praying the rosary after the Mass. Early last year, after the war in Ukraine broke out, Pope Francis reminded us of the importance of the first Saturday devotion and of the prayer of the rosary. And so we renewed that practice here as well, especially to pray for peace. 4 weeks ago today, that was October 7, it was first Saturday of October, we gathered, we prayed. It was the ninth day of our Father Francis Novena. It was the Feast of Our Lady of the Rosary. We prayed for peace in Ukraine. Little did we know that that very morning, the terrorist attack in Israel was taking place. And some 12 or 13 or 1400 people were slaughtered that very day. A terrible outbreak of war in Israel. And you know that things have gotten worse ever since. The casualties on that first day were, they say, around 1,400, maybe. Now, because of the response of Israel to attack Hamas, the number of fatalities is somewhere in the range of 10,000, taking both Palestinians and Israelis together. So a huge loss of life, terrible destruction, and it's seems likely to be getting worse. So I mention that because we commit ourselves to praying for peace, and first Saturdays are one of the days we especially do it. So today we'll be praying the rosary for peace, not only in Ukraine, but also in Israel, Gaza. Now, a couple of reasons why this terrible conflict in Israel is so fresh in our minds. First of all, it's headline news every day. That's what the world is concerned about, the war in Gaza. But also because we were supposed to be there. A whole bunch of us would have been there right now. Our planned trip to the Holy Land was supposed to start last week. So today we would have been in the middle of our pilgrimage. We would have been, I suppose, somewhere in Jerusalem today. 17 people from the Philippines, some 24 people from the United States. We were going to meet there and have a Holy Land pilgrimage, and that whole plan had to be abandoned because of the outbreak of the war. So all this week I've been thinking, I wonder where I would have been today. Like, I don't remember the itinerary. It was all planned out for months and months. They worked on the itinerary and the plans and everything. And so it was very clear where we would have been on Saturday morning, November 4. But we're not there in the providence of God. And so, but we still have our hearts focused on the Holy Land. The other reason I think this stands out to me is because today's first reading brings up again the special place of the chosen people in the plan of God. St. Paul, speaking to the Romans, talks about the irrevocable call of God to his people. God doesn't change his mind. He doesn't reject the people he has chosen. So God has in mind, and still has in mind, a special place for the Jews. Now, we have to be careful about this. There is a strain of Christianity, it's very strong in the United States, that equates the Jews, the chosen people, with the Israelis, as if it's the same. And it's not exactly the same. There are many people living in Israel who are not Jewish at all, and there are many who identify themselves as Jews only in a cultural or political sense. So it's not as if we can just equate the Israeli state, political state that exists now in the 21st century, with the chosen people as described in the scriptures. Of course, there's overlap. But it's not as if we have to take the position that because the Jews are God's chosen people, we have to take the side of Israel in every position, modern state of Israel, in every position that they take. Although that seems to be the kind of the default attitude of the Americans, is whatever Israel does is great. So I think that's too simplistic. At the same time, even though we can't reduce the plan of God to simply political entities, we have to keep in mind that the providence of God, the extraordinary providence of God, is always at work. And this is what Paul is reflecting on here. He's aware that with the proclamation of the gospel, in general, the Jews were not buying it. They were rejecting the gospel, and that moved the Christians, including Paul himself, to proclaim the gospel to the Gentiles, and that was yielding an abundant harvest of Gentiles whom the Jews thought were not even part of the picture. So Paul is reflecting on this and saying, well, look at what happened here. Because of the refusal of the Jews, the Gentiles benefit. God was at work in this strange contradiction that the very people chosen don't seem to get the benefit of what God had prepared all along, and the people who are not even part of the story suddenly get the benefit of the gospel. So it's not to place a judgment on the Jews or think that the Gentiles are any better than they are. It's to focus on how God's plan unfolds in history. And it's a very marvelous and mysterious thing that God moves people at different times and in different ways, and he's orchestrating a vast harvest. And so this is what Paul says here. It looks to you perhaps like the Jews have been rejected. They have not been rejected. God does not change his mind. The gifts and the call of God are irrevocable. God has a plan for the Jews still, that after the, what Paul says here, after the full number of the Gentiles comes in, after the effect of the initial rejection by the Jews has its effect on the rest of the human family, well then, they also will be brought in some marvelous and mysterious ways of God. The point here being to bow down before the ways of God. Without judgment, without prejudice, without a declaration that we know everything that's happening. No, we're humbled by the greatness of God's ways, especially because we don't understand them, but also because we can see he's doing something great all the time. Now that takes us to the lesson, the main lesson of today's gospel, which is expressed clearly at the very end: everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and the one who humbles himself will be exalted. This principle comes up again and again in the Bible. In fact, if you look ahead to tomorrow's gospel, you know it's also the conclusion of tomorrow's gospel. The pondering groups know this already. You ponder tomorrow's gospel, it's all about how the Pharisees are misusing their position to take glory to themselves, and Jesus says, no, whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. Very same point that's made today. But what is this lesson for us? To beware of this tendency, which we all have, to exalt ourselves, to act as if it's up to us to make life better for ourselves, and we have to choose or take what we want. This is what we see whenever there's a war. Everybody's trying to exalt himself. Everyone's trying to take the better position. Everyone's trying to prove himself tougher than everyone else. And it gets very ugly very fast. Aside from the violence and the injustice of it, it's just a terrible disposition to see on display all the time. People exalting themselves, people boasting about themselves, people forcing themselves into center stage, people taking the best place because that's what they think they should do. I'm going to take care of myself, I'm going to take care of my position, of my people, my ideology, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to be at number one. When we take that attitude, what is the response of the Lord? He's going to humble us. He's going to humble us. Not because he's against us, but because he's for us. Because he knows how bad it is for us to place ourselves so high and to get in the way of his great plan. So he says, whoever exalts himself will be humbled. the example Jesus uses here is the matter of choosing the best place at the table. It's so trivial, it's almost silly, but it does put on display this very attitude. We have to get the best place. We have to let everybody know that we're great, or that we're prominent, or we deserve honor. As if God doesn't have us in the palm of his hand, as if God isn't taking care of us, we have to act as if we have to take care of ourselves all the time. It's pathetic. Jesus says, well, what if you take the best place and someone who's higher ranking than you comes along, and then you'll have to be bumped down to the lowest place and you'll be embarrassed. But it's not embarrassing if you don't put yourself there in the first place. And that's the second part of this instruction. Not only is the one who exalts himself going to be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted. It doesn't matter where you sit. That's not the point of Jesus. What matters is the attitude, where you sit in interiorly, the attitude of allowing God to be in charge and allowing God to honor the people whom he wants to honor when he wants to honor them, and accepting all that, letting the process of being exalted be in the hands of God. And when we do that, when we step back from the first place, when we dedicate ourselves to service, when we empty ourselves of this self-righteousness and desire to be number one, then we allow God to do something much greater than we could ever have come up with in the first place. So it's a very beautiful lesson. It's a hard one to take, because when we humble ourselves, we can feel like people are taking advantage of us. We can feel like we're not doing what we have to do to stand up for ourselves. It doesn't mean we don't have to stand up for justice and self-defense. Of course we do. But we're not doing it because we think we're God, or because we think we're better than anyone else. The whole point is to be a servant of God, be accepting of the providence of God, which is not always so clear to us what he's doing and why, and why he's doing it in the timing and with the pace he's doing it. Certainly people who are victims of terrible injustices, like we see in the Holy Land now, or we see in Ukraine, it's much more mysterious to them. What in the world is God doing? How can we humble ourselves when people are attacking us? That part is very, very difficult. But the principle remains the same. It remains true. The one who exalts himself will be humbled. So if we exalt ourselves, we're going to be humbled. And the one who humbles himself will be exalted. That's the right way to place ourselves before God. No matter what anyone else thinks of us, let us place ourselves before God as his humble servants. On First Saturdays, we recall the example of Our Lady. What does she describe herself as? The humble servant of the Lord. Behold, the handmaid of the Lord. Let it be done to me according to your word.